Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone buries the dead from Friday's fuel tanker explosion.
It was a very somber occasion. The corpses were all draped in the national colors of green, white, and blue. His Excellency, the President, made a very touching speech in which he called on Sierra Leoneans to close ranks and unify around this tragedy.
Eswatini pro-democracy groups issue an ultimatum to release two detained lawmakers by this Friday. Kenya's Revenue Authority wants to tax rich Kenyans displaying lavish lifestyles on social media. Malawi's parliament welcomes the country's first ever albino lawmaker. And WFP says $65 million needed to ease Zimbabwe's food insecurity.
The latest 2021 Rural Zimbabwe Vulnerability Assessment Committee indicates that 2.9 million people, that's 27% of rural households, will continue to be food insecure during the peak rain season between January 2022 to March 2022.
And the importance of cobalt in the DRC to electric cars. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio says he will set up a special presidential task force to investigate the causes of last Friday's fuel tanker explosion in Wellington, Freetown, that resulted in the death of more than 100 people and many more seriously injured. President Maada Bio also declared a three-day mourning period from November 8th to the 10th. There was a mass funeral on Monday of the dead. Information Minister Mohamed Urakma Sware says it was a somber occasion.
The corpses were all draped in the national colors of green, white, and blue. His Excellency, the President, made a very touching speech in which he called on Sierra Leoneans to close ranks and unify around this tragedy to ensure that it never happens again. So he was at the funeral today, accompanied by the Honorable Vice President, government ministers, bereaved families, and other members of the interfaith community. In his speech, he reiterated his condolences to the bereaved families and re-echoed his government's commitment to continue to provide psychosocial care and undertake the payment of all medical bills for all of the patients hospitalized in various hospitals across the city. He also used the opportunity to call on Sierra Leoneans to imbibe a civic culture that respects the rule of law and that is rule-based.
What kind of help is the Sierra Leone government providing to the families of the deceased and the survivors? Because we are hearing that some of the survivors say they had to sleep outdoors.
James, it has to be appreciated that this was an emergency situation. Government rose to the occasion. And as I speak to you, the National Disaster Management Agency has been registering and verifying survivors of that incident and those who have been affected with a view to providing the much needed support they require. So this is work in progress. And I'd like to assure you that this is a very compassionate government. We can't abandon our people in this very difficult moment.
The latest information we have is that 115 people died and hundreds more injured as a result of the explosion. Mr. Minister, how was this possible that so many people will lose their lives? What happened?
This is indeed a very unfortunate incident. The records we have do not add up to 115, but it's in the region of between 110 to 115. Having said that, you understand the circumstance of the accident. This was a collision between a fuel tanker and one that was conveying granite stones. It happened in a very populated intersection and in the early hours of the night when many people were returning home from various schedules. So it was a populated place. And at the time of this incident, many unsuspecting people did not understand the dire implications of their actions. So we got to where we were, and we ended up with this epic disaster in our hands. But our first responders rose to the occasion, and government has continued to demonstrate political will every inch of the way. The very night the incident happened, the Honorable Vice President visited all the hospitals where the patients were admitted, and in the morning, he visited the epic site The president cut short his overseas engagements, returned home, visited all the hospitals, visited the disaster site, and reassured all and sundry of his government's unrelenting support to the families of the survivors and commitment to ensure that all of those who died are given befitting clinical burials.
Mohamed Rahman Suarez, Sierra Leone's information minister, he was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. In Eswatini, pro-democracy groups say they have issued an ultimatum to the government to release two detained lawmakers. The groups, which include banned political parties such as the People's United Democratic Movement, PUDEMO, say the ultimatum expires this Friday. The parliamentarians were detained after expressing support for the actions of pro-democracy protesters who are demanding political reforms. Critics say the group's ultimatum to a legitimate government is unacceptable. Mlangisi Makanya is the president of PUDEMO. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that pro-democracy groups are planning for a surprise action if the administration in Mbabane fails to release the detained lawmakers by this Friday.
This ultimatum comes after we have accepted the reality that we don't have an independent judiciary in Swaziland. This is evidence in the fact that while the incarcerated members of parliament have lodged an appeal against the High Court judge decision to refuse them their bail, the registrar of the Supreme Court has failed for over a month now to set a date for the hearing of the appeal. And it is because the king has given a clear instruction that this matter must not be heard. So we're simply giving him until Friday to make sure that those members of parliament are released, to make sure that all exiles are allowed to return, including the recently exiled member of parliament, to ensure that political activity and political parties are allowed to operate in the country.
Recently, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa met with the king and called for a genuine dialogue. With this ultimatum, doesn't that negate genuine dialogue without preconditions?
It doesn't negate. Remember, this demand is a long outstanding demand. For instance, who will dialogue if the people that are supposed to dialogue are in prison? If this dialogue is all-inclusive, as per the statement of President Ramaphosa, if this dialogue is genuine, it will be a dialogue that will make sure that everyone is able to participate. Obviously, prisoners cannot dialogue. But remember, before the dialogue itself, there must be terms of reference for that dialogue. We want the incarcerated leaders and those who are in exile to also participate in the drafting of the terms of reference for the dialogue. So these demands are nothing but a precursor or a leveling of the playing ground.
What will be the action of pro-democracy groups if the government, perhaps, as supporters say, refuses to budge with the ultimatum that you have issued that ends on Friday?
All I can say, Peter, is watch the space. Wait until the weekend. We will announce what will be the course of action that we'll take. We don't want to announce now, but watch the space if they fail to adhere to our ultimatum. Let them try us. This is, by the way, the same message we said when they banned petitions. We said that they are testing our character. And indeed, when they decided to refuse to lift up the ban on petitions, you know what happened. So we're giving them until Friday.
Mlangisi Makanya is the president of PUDEMO in Eswatini. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. Malawi's parliament on Monday welcomed the country's first ever elected albino lawmaker when it convened after months of recess. The presence of Overstone Kondowe in Malawi's National Assembly is seen as a victory for albinos who have faced attacks in the southern African country since 2014. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Let me assure you that I'll do to the maximum of my potential.
Until last Thursday, when he took the oath of office in the capital, Lilongwe, Kondowe was President Lazarus Chakwera's special advisor on persons with albinism and disabilities. The move, following a by-election 2 weeks ago, comes amid continued attacks on people with albinism in Malawi. Police records show that in the last 4 months, there were 7 attacks on albinos, including killings, attempted abductions, and physical violence. Separately, grave robbers have exhumed corpses to retrieve albinos' bodies. Kondowe is also the former president of the Association of Persons with Albinism in Malawi, or APAM. He says that as a lawmaker in the National Assembly, he will pursue his fight against the incidents targeting albinos.
Let me assure them that I'll do to the maximum of my potential to make sure that if we also have programs like what South Africa put in place, I'm ready to do that. And I've always demonstrated my ability to do so when I was acting outside the system. Now I'm in the center of the system. I'm sure change is coming, not tomorrow, but today.
The statistics show that since 2014, more than 170 albinos have been attacked in Malawi because of false beliefs that concoctions made with their body parts bring luck and wealth. To help stop the attacks, Malawian courts have imposed stiffer punishments on perpetrators. For example, 2 weeks ago, the High Court in the Northern Malawi sentenced 2 men to life in prison with hard labor for killing a 54-year-old albino. Young Muhamba is the current president of the APAM. He says the election of Kondowe to parliament sends a clear message that albinos are equal to other Malawians.
We will develop some bills what to do with the protection of people's ability. So he will be the first voice there in parliament. He will be the first person to table the bill and to support it, and to also make others support it. So he will be like our voice.
Muhamba says the association is currently pushing the government to start implementing its program of constructing houses for people with albinism as a security measure. Simon Munde is acting executive director for the Federation of Disability Organizations in Malawi. Munde believes that Kondowe, a member of the ruling Malawi Congress Party, will also represent people with disabilities.
We have faith in him, the fact that he's quite an advocate. He's done it even when he was the presidential advisor on disability. And we're not doubting in any way that that kind of a spirit will continue with it, as now he'll be able to speak within the legislative assembly.
Munde said the election of Kondowe to parliament should send a message to other public or private institutions that disability does not equate to inability. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 9th. The World Food Program says it is seeking $65 million to ease food insecurity in Zimbabwe. The UN agency says its assessment shows that more than 5 million people in the Southern African nation are looking at food shortages in the coming months. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Belinda Povoviska, the WFP Zimbabwe spokeswoman, told VOA on Monday that the UN agency had started looking for funds to import food for those in need.
The latest 2021 Rural Zimbabwe Vulnerability Assessment Committee indicates that 2.9 million people, that's 27% of rural households, will continue to be food insecure during the peak lean season between January 2022 to March 2022. Similarly, in urban areas, up to 2.4 million people are expected to be food insecure, according to the latest 2020 Urban Livelihoods Assessment.
The government says Zimbabwe experienced a bumper harvest this year, but the lack of food in rural areas indicates the harvest was in fact disappointing. Information Minister Monica Mtswangwa says Zimbabwe's perennial food shortages will end with more production in the farms in the coming 2021-2022 season, which is expected to start anytime soon. She says the government will make sure farmers have the supplies and money they need to meet national requirements for both human consumption and industrial use.
The strategy will result in more area being put to crop production, as evidenced by the proposed increases of the hectarage of the following crops. So there will be more increases in hectarage of maize, sorghum, pearl millet, finger millet, soya beans, and tobacco. The financing of the summer cropping and livestock program will be through the public and private sector, as well as development partners.
Zimbabwe, once the breadbasket of the region, has been for years facing food shortages, forcing it to rely on humanitarian organizations such as World Vision, USAID, and the WFP to feed the people. The government blames the problems on recurring droughts, but its critics point to a chaotic land reform program which started in 2000 and displaced experienced white farmers from their land. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
The Kenya Revenue Authority is targeting rich Kenyans who are displaying lavish lifestyles on social media and paying little or no tax at all. According to Commissioner General Giti Mburu, the officers are spending time on social media trolling Kenyans, posting photos of luxurious cars, throwing expensive parties, living lavishly to ensure that their taxes match what they share on social media. As Marine Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, economists say the move will increase tax collection.
The Kenya Revenue Authority, KRA, is literally invading social media users in Kenya by luring them to pay tax on what they say every Kenyan must pay their share of taxes. In an interview with Kenya's Business Daily, the Kenya Revenue Authority Commissioner General Githu Mburu said that authority is in the race to bring more people into the tax bracket and reduce tax cheating and evasion in the quest to meet the targets. Economist Ali Khan Sacho said that the move by taxman is the best way to increase taxes, and that with social media, they'll get more.
The KRA have actually done an incredible job with respect to using social media. I think, you know, there's a lot of evidence that you can collect on social media, which can be used in order to collect more tax. I think, you know, there are plenty of people who are escaping the tax dragnet and probably, you know, living large on social media. So I think that detective work will certainly pay off, and it's a very valid approach for them to be taking.
The Revenue Authority has a team focused on exposing tax cheats through the sites such as Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat. The authority boss says that on social media, there are some people posting some nice things such as nice houses, cars, taking their families to good places, and that the authorities see tax in such posts. Beatrice Saisi is a young Kenyan doing door-to-door pedicure services. She says she posts her work on social media, but at times goes a day without earning. She wonders how the Revenue Authority will tax her, given the income is not constant.
For a business like mine, some days I make money. Others are bad. I make nothing at all, yet I posted. So how will they calculate my returns? They should just be contented with the returns I'm filing now. Because I'm just wondering, why would you be taxed for posting something fancy on social media? And then they should know that some people just post for fun and have nothing at all behind the scenes.
Apart from using social media sites, the authority has been using various databases to pursue suspected tax cheats, among them bank statements, import records, motor vehicle registration details, Kenya Power records, water bills, and data from the Kenya Civil Aviation Authority, which reveal individuals who own assets such as helicopters. Economist Ali Sacho says the authority has to understand other businesses that have fluctuating earnings like that of content creators before imposing tax on them.
Creatives who have very fluctuating incomes, I think the KRA needs to be more innovative to get closer to the taxpayer, the creative taxpayer, understand the volatility of earnings, and therefore assist in smoothing tax payments that an individual might be encountering.
The crackdown on the rich is part of the commitment that Kenya made to the International Monetary Fund, IMF, to recover unpaid taxes from the high net worth professionals and traders in efforts to raise the national revenues. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
This week, officials at COP26 will address the transition to electric cars and how this can offset climate change. Most of the electric cars on the market get their cobalt from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where workers are exploited with low wages, violent abuse, and more. According to a new report by RAID, the group's executive director, Annika van Woudenberg, spoke to Ricky Stryak about their research findings and the actions that need to be taken to ensure a green revolution does not mean disenfranchising DRC residents.
What's interesting about our findings is that this isn't artisanal mining, which has been in the news a lot lately. This is at large-scale industrial cobalt mines, which really provide the bulk of the cobalt that goes into the rechargeable batteries on electric vehicles. And what we found were really dire conditions, including extremely low pay for the workers, excessive working hours, degrading treatment, violent discrimination, racism. I mean, really a wake-up call for any of the electric vehicle manufacturers like Tesla or General Motors or others who are building the electric vehicles for our green energy revolution. They need to check their supply chains and really make sure that the cobalt we're getting is clean and free from human rights abuses. And our research shows that certainly today is not the case.
Can you tell me more specifics about, for example, the extremely low pay?
So at the heart of the problem we found was a system of subcontracting companies. So in effect, thousands of these workers, and remember, these big mines employ tens of thousands of Congolese workers. They're not hired directly by the mine, but in fact, they're hired indirectly via labor agencies and subcontracting companies. And it's these companies that really are not providing healthcare benefits, that are paying them an absolute pittance, sometimes $80 a month, sometimes even less, which works out to just under a few dollars a day. And look, that's in sharp contrast to, of course, the huge profits that mining companies are making, and of course, the boom that we're going to see in electric vehicles, which will make many of these manufacturers a hefty sum of money, not least Tesla. Look, the other thing that we found was that some of the treatment of workers was just shocking, from being beaten, slapped, insulted at, pulled around by their ears, kicked, you know, hit with shovels, brooms, cables.
And you obviously mentioned the electric car manufacturers who use cobalt, especially given the timing of COP26 at the moment and this talk of, you know, greening and climate change. How important is it to make sure that with these movements comes accountability of the supply chain?
Look, I think this is a big issue for COP26 to look at this week. And they're due to talk about transportation on Wednesday, in particular this switch to electric vehicles away from the internal combustion engine. And I think the reality of this for all of us is anyone buying an electric vehicle is likely to be linked to cobalt coming from Congo and therefore to this worker exploitation. We need a just transition away from the fossil fuel economy.
That was Annika van Woudenberg, executive director of RAID. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from London. And that's it for this Tuesday, November 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a lovely day.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important Africa news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports.